This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the results, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Is Sky Blues Extra.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Sky Blues Extra podcast, proudly sponsored by the Sky Blue Tavern and Dylan's Brewery. This week, the first episode since the season kicked off, you're joined by me, Ross Cooper, and I'm delighted to be joined by Matt Trutwin. How are you, Matt?
Very well, mate. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. Not too bad. And hopefully we may be joined by Ross Spence as well, but he's having some technical difficulties. I just think he's still nursing a hangover after the victory against Middlesbrough. Personally, he did say he had a house party to go to, so that's what I think it actually is. But thank you, as always, to all the listeners for joining in. And in this episode, we're going to cover, obviously, the last week. There's been a lot to talk about from the start of the season to transfer news. And then, of course, the Middlesbrough game that happened on the weekend just gone as well. And I guess, Matt, what's your overriding sort of feeling from the last sort of 7 days, you know, from the Leicester game up until Middlesbrough? It's a bit of a interesting week vibe wise it felt like, you know, from all the excitement and all the money that we've spent and reinvested from the Yokera sale, couple of defeats, a big departure, and suddenly it's interesting how things can sort of, you know, switch the other way again vibe wise how did you feel as the week progressed?
I think personally I was just trying to fight that natural urge that seemed to take over or take hold of a lot of Cov fans with you know, with the fact that we'd obviously suffered a couple of defeats, and you know, and then you get to the end of the week and obviously the news that none of us wanted to hear with Hamer moving on. And I understand it. I understand that natural urge that people have. You know, you lose a couple of games to start the season and you lose one of your best players. Of course, it's a struggle. But I was fairly balanced, to be honest with you. Obviously, Leicester, I'm sure we'll get into to some extent, but we certainly held our own there, which is we've got to keep in mind. You know, that's a team that's come down from the Premier League and spent a lot of money. So really, we did more than well enough in that game. AFC Wimbledon obviously is disappointing, but it's a disappointment that we should be used to now. With Robins, it's a terrible record. And, you know, look, he's not trying to lose that that game, and he certainly doesn't want us to go out in the first round. But I do think from a priority point of view, you have to put it into context. It's not our priority this season. Certainly, you have a lot of fans who were talking about a charge back to Wembley or what we might do in the league. So the EFL Cup really isn't our priority. And it's a game that on any other day, we do win 3 or 4 nil. And unfortunately, we've lost. So it's frustrating, of course. And it's a long time then to the weekend. And obviously to have that time filled with the Hamer news isn't great. But yeah, fairly balanced. And obviously we've finished off in the right way. And now everybody can look forward to what will be, I'm sure, a great season and an exciting couple of weeks with signings as well.
Exactly. You know, a week is a long time in football, and it's mad how emotions can change from one Sunday after the Leicester game to the next. You know, you mentioned the Leicester game. We'll touch on that because this is the first podcast since the season started, so we've not been able to go over that. We weren't in too much detail, but as you quite rightly said, Matt, you know, a team who are bookies' favourites to win the league, sold a couple of high-profile players, but have spent, you know, close to £40 million, which in the Championship is, you know, astronomical, and still have the basis of a squad there of Premier League names, you know, Premier League players like Ndidi, who only a couple of years ago was being touted as the next Kante, you know, and so there's a lot of quality there still. And, you know, as I'm sure you're the same, you know, being from sort of Leicester and having a lot of friends and family who are Leicester season ticket holders, my memories of going to the King Power or the Walkers before always ended in just misery, you know, like terrible performances, and we'd go down with a whimper. But it felt like this was the best away performance I'd seen a Coventry side put in at Leicester in such a long time. And there was a lot of positives to take from the game and the performance, wasn't there?
Yeah, I think one of the things that stood out, you know, obviously a lot of attention around it because they were a team coming down from the Premier League and it's on Sky. A lot of the talk that you hear is about how strong they are for this division. And before the game, you know, in the build-up, you're kind of thinking, oh, this obviously is going to be a tricky game. One of the best compliments I think I can pay to the team is you kind of forgot a lot about how strong they supposedly are or how much firepower they have in terms of kind of their full squad and on the bench and everything. Watching the game, you didn't really feel that this is a side that's, you know, got all these star power or all this star power across their starting 11 and on the bench. And I think we heard about £100 million worth of talent or whatever on the bench, but watching the game, it certainly didn't feel like there was anything really that major to split the two sides. And it's a testament to what we've obviously done in the summer, but over the last few years as well, we are at that point now. So I think when you put it in context, you take out the defeat out of the conversation, which obviously we can't do fully because it's you know what affects the league table at the end of the day. But in terms of how the squad looks, how the team looks, watching that game, it was overwhelmingly a positive experience.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, obviously Jamie Vardy leading the line, who's obviously scored a hell of a lot of goals. We dealt with him extremely well and made him look very, very sort of average.
What do you think he'll do this season? Because I don't know if he's still favourite to be top goal scorer, but I know he was, and it's the big name element to it. But
yeah, that's such a lazy thing to sort of say. I think, and speaking to people, you know, friends who go there, they do think he's past it. And I've always thought for quite a few years, even when they were doing well in the Prem, I thought the moment he loses that yard of pace, his actual game technically, I don't think is that good. And, you know, Fads dealt with him. I mean, there was obviously for both sides had several, you know, debutants. Obviously our back line was pretty fresh with Latibodier and Bobby Thomas either side of, you know, Carmuk Fadzean. And I think both of them really stood out, didn't they? I mean, Bobby Thomas for me was, you know, just, you know, a tank at the back, but also showed he can do some nice marauding runs, bring the ball out of play, and exciting signing. You know, he wasn't necessarily the centre back, you know, 6 weeks ago that fans thought or even hoped that we'd get from Burnley, but we brought him in for a couple of million, 4-year deal, and he already from this game alone looked like a big, big asset, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. He really did stand out from the off, really. He's just got a great feel about him, to be honest with you. You know, he looks like that, I don't want to say old-fashioned centre-half, but he just looks solid. He looks like the kind of player you depend on. And if you're a teammate looking around at players or looking behind you at the next level of defence, you know, he's somebody that you'd feel confident is obviously going to be difficult to get past. And he's shown that in his play. Certainly, we're looking at the Leicester game here. He looked really strong and confident. Didn't look overawed by big name opposition, which for him, you know, realistically at this stage of his career, that's probably the strongest level of opposition that he's played against. But he looked more than ready to mix it with those players, and he looked more than capable of doing it as well.
I mean, you're playing a side who you're probably, you know, are probably going to win the league or get automatic promotion just because their squad depth. And so you're not really going to have many harder sort of challenges. And he, for a player who's playing in League One last year, more than looked up to the level of the Championship and slotted into that hole left by sort of McNally more than well. And I think I think it was testament that when he was told that he was injured and couldn't play against Wimbledon, that everyone was a bit like, oh, gutted, you know, because he'd made such a good impression from that first performance. The other obviously key talking point from that game, I felt in the lineup, was obviously Ben Wilson getting given the nod. There had been a lot of discussion, obviously, on our Sky Blues Extra preview pod. Myself, Wardy, and Dino, we discussed it at length. It had been a big topic on Twitter and on the forums because Wilson had a little injury, missed a couple of friendlies. Collins had been brought in for money, and it was one of those. And for me, it felt like the right call. You know, the Golden Glove winner getting the start. Were you surprised? Is it what you expected, Matt, in terms of the decision Robbins made?
Yeah, my thought process was always that the number one position was his to lose. Yeah. Even though we're bringing a goalkeeper in for money, you know, as is evident now, you know, as bringing people in for money is not the shock that it would have been in the past. But I guess, yeah, when we brought Brad Collins in, it was still relatively one of the early signings for us. So I get it. I understand people probably thinking if we sign a player for money, that generally means for us you're going to feature very heavily. So I understand that. But yeah, I mean, I'm in agreement with you. You win the Golden Glove from last season. You deserve the right to start this season in goal, to be completely honest. And yeah, I think anything outside of an injury, you know, as long as he wasn't affected by the injury, obviously, that he'd had in pre-season, then I think it's still his to lose, really.
And he played well, didn't he? He made a good save, yeah. You know, from McAteer at the end of the first half and looked really commanding. Nothing he could do about either goal. And and obviously, as we touched on, unfortunately, fell to a defeat. And in that game, probably the key moment, there's two either side of, you know, attacking and defending. Attacking-wise, we created the best chance of the game. Didn't put them away, did we? Sort of some poor finishing, a bit of bad luck as well. And then at the other end, making a couple of substitutes and then, you know, Dewsbury Hall showing that actually, you know, if you give any team, you know, a chance, especially somebody who is a Premier League quality player, that you're going to get punished.
Yeah, that is always the concern. Obviously, it's great for us to show that we can go toe-to-toe with a side that's got so much quality in their squad, but you still, unless you put the game away, you know, this is the cliche, and we've all said it, we've all heard it over the last 7 days since the game, but you know, unless you put the game away in that situation, then you're always struggling. And yeah, it two really good goals, unfortunately, in terms of how he's taken them. You know, he's a really good header, to be fair to him, and as you say, Wilson's got no chance with that. The finish for the winner as well, it's pinpoint accuracy into the top corner. Just one of those things you have to hold your hands up to and say, you know, if we do what we should have done earlier in the game, then to obviously do what we know that they've got the quality to do, unfortunately.
Yeah, and you know, unfortunately, that meant we left the King Power empty-handed, but certainly I think the mood amongst, you know, the Sky Blue Army was generally very, very positive. A lot of hope and a lot of, like, as I say, had friends and family message me saying that they rode their luck, and you know, if they'd been playing a Premier League side, you know, they would have been 3 or 4-0 down, absolutely no questions asked. So I guess bittersweet, but there was, because you never want to lose those games, but it was a really good performance. And then we go into Wednesday night against Wimbledon, as you quite rightly, you know, said at the top of the podcast, you know, the League Cup is not something we have a particularly good relationship with. I think ever since we beat Man United, I just don't think I can't have any good memories of any games. But we traveled down to League Two, AFC Wimbledon, and I actually was pretty excited for the game because we had a lot of new players who were on the bench against Leicester because they'd signed only in the week leading up to, and in the case of Hadji Wright, had literally been signed and hadn't even trained, you know, he'd literally signed on the Friday. So I thought it was a good opportunity for the likes of Van Ajvak and Hadji Wright to play, and he did make some changes, but it was a pretty strong team against Wimbledon. And you know, I think it was nice because in years gone by, Robbins has made a load of changes and it literally has just been kids, do you know what I mean, everywhere you've looked. And it's just, it showed already, even with more business still to come, at that point on Wednesday, actually, he can make 8 changes to the team. And it still had several, probably close to £10 million worth of players on the pitch, you know. And so it was, you know, and we got off to, you know, a good start. Matty Godden, you know, had you right winning a penalty, Matty Godden dispatching it. And we talked about this off air, Matt, but he did a celebration, a message to the Cov Twitter faithful, do you think?
Yeah, I think, you know, Matty is somebody who pays attention to what's being said. And usually that's always, you know, very overwhelmingly been a positive thing and has a great relationship with the fans. And obviously, I just think the timing, as we said before we started, you know, the timing of the contract with people maybe being a bit shy. Maybe this is that, you know, how we've changed in terms of our mentality now of, you know, we're spending money. So we expect everybody to come in and be on a $2-4 multi-million pound deal. So all of our strikers are going to be to that level. And it's like, well, we're still working towards the confines of a budget, and there's still a place for Matty Godden, I think, in terms of what we've seen from him at the football club. But, you know, you combine the timing of that contract and a few people being maybe a bit shocked and surprised about that, with obviously what happened at Leicester. And there were a few comments online which, you know, were unnecessary. And I know we spoke before and we said, you know, some comments talking about him missing the chances. I think, you know, he's got to be strong enough to be able to take that on board, because it's just fact, you know, he's got chances there to finish off the game for us. But I want to think the message was more towards those fans who were talking about him not deserving a new contract for us, and hopefully it will die down at some point, because, you know, I think the message is made now. I think hopefully we can move on from it.
Yes. And then talking of the new contract, a new 2-year deal, so until 2025. How did you feel? You know, obviously Matty Godden's been a great servant since, you know, we signed him in League One. He's scored goals every season, had his, you know, a fair share of injury issues, but when he plays, his goals to game record can't really be argued. And he did score some vital goals in the second half of last season, which to help us get into the playoffs. I mean, I personally was very, very pleased to see him get that deal. I think he's an experienced head. I think Fads and Kelly may well depart at the end of this season, so you want to try and keep some continuity into next season and beyond. So, yeah, how did you feel with Matty Godden and the contract news that he'd extended?
Yeah, I'm with you. I think the continuity thing is a massive point. You know, it is one of the things I look at. We've had such great team spirit since, obviously, Mark Robbins has come back into the club. And I'm sure we'd always bring players in who continue that. But, you know, it's good to see a few faces around there who you can kind of tie things together and who have experience of the club and the fan base and maybe give people a bit of a what's what and what you're getting with the club. But also, we're not talking about just having passengers on the pitch as well, because they can show people around the city or anything like that. Matty Godden, as you said, he scored some really important goals for us. I think you put it in a context of what he potentially will be at the football club in the next couple of years, and I agree. I think it's a good move for us. You know, we need probably 4 strikers all bringing something to the table for us to be talking about anything towards the top end of the table. And if we're going to do that, I know we've got Hedgie Wright, and I know we've got Sims, and we've got a lot of hope of what they can do. But past that, we need, you know, another couple of strikers still contributing to the cause throughout the season. And Matty Godden's always shown us that he can do that. So, yeah, more than happy to see that one get done.
And we have been joined by Ross Spence after technical issues. He's finally joined us. And Ross, me and Matt, we were just talking about the Wimbledon sort of game and Matty Godden scoring, putting us ahead and things looking, you know, going well, having chances, his new contract. And then really, you know, same story, missed chances and everything fell apart. What was your take on, you know, where it all went wrong against Wimbledon?
Yeah, it's to be honest, I was saying it to you about cups as well. Someone said, "Oh, how come you didn't travel down to me yesterday about the cup game?" And I said, "Well, to be honest, we've never really, for years, especially in the Robins, we've never really took cup competitions, especially the Carabao Cup. It's never been anything we've really been serious about. I think the furthest we've got is like the second round twice, isn't it, in like the last 6 years. So it's not something we really prioritise. And I just think it just comes down to that mentality. Obviously, we had the first game, obviously, with Hamer going and stuff in the week as well. There was probably a bit of unrest with that going on as well. And obviously, there's a new team that's basically completely trying to gel with each other. And I think it just come down to the fact of that, one, we didn't take our chances, and two, we just didn't see out the game well enough, basically. Whereas later on in the season, if it was an FA Cup game, I think it would have been a lot different story. So, yeah, I think the Wimbledon game and obviously everything happening, it's never nice to lose it to a lower league team. it's not something we want to happen as we feel like we're progressing. And obviously seeing the draw that night that we would have had Chelsea away was even more of a kick in the teeth, because if it would have just been like an average game against someone in League One or our division, we'd have just said, oh, okay, it's not the end of the world. But when you know you could have had a good away day at a Premier League team, it is a bit of a blow. But to be honest with you, I mean, it gives us now a chance for this first half of the season to just solely focus on getting the league games up to scratch, and it will reduce any chance of maybe injuries or having to overplay play games and things like that. So there's negatives and positives to both. But yeah, it's obviously never good to go out in the first round, and especially in the fashion that we did it in.
Yeah, and as Ross says, Matt, you know, it's the draw probably makes it worse. I mean, if it had been someone like in our division, I don't think any of us would have really cared. And I think in the grand scheme of things, we don't really, because as you say, under Robbins and for as long as I remember, the League Cup, we've never done anything in. But Robbins's post-match comments, he seemed probably more sort of pissed off than I've ever seen him, you know, in terms of losing in the League Cup, because I think he probably saw it as an opportunity with hopefully a bigger squad of, you know, strength and depth to give these new players, who he described as we're strangers at the minute, minutes, and we've lost an avenue for that. So, I mean, yeah, what was your overriding, you know, feeling, you know, from the sort of defeat and the manner of the defeat as well, two late goals?
I think it is the manner of the defeat. You know, I don't want to say I don't care about the EFL Cup, but I just, you know, in the list of priorities, it is way down there. And there was a frustration, obviously, then of who we would have gone on to play, but not so much the fact that we went out of the competition. But I understand, you know, we were talking about this before we started, and kind of look at it now, and we talk about what we've done in past seasons, and obviously Robbins doesn't appear to have taken it seriously because he's played what we might classify as kids, and this time we've got that stronger squad now, and it's probably only Howley was the only kid you might want to say who was in that side. Outside of that, it was, you know, an experimental side, I guess, for us, or a change team, but a lot of players in there who we spent big money for, mixed in with established first team players. So, but I think, you know, in the main, we did control the game. We should have gone on and won it at a canter. We've obviously suffered the way that we've suffered against Leicester. So that's probably heightened it, because it's ended up being a similar cause of defeat to what happened with Leicester. Not only just the two late goals, but the fact of we could have put the game to bed. So I think that's where his frustration was. You know, I don't think that he's too worried about the EFL Cup, but he's now got a squad of players and people in that side who he spent money on, and you'd expect us to be strong enough to put those sides away. So I think it's the manner of the defeat, but at the same time, he will talk about the fact of we're probably, you know, a little bit behind in terms of how quickly we're able to get players into the squad as well. And they're still trying to find their feet, certainly trying to find their feet as a team as well. So, you know, to an extent, whilst we don't expect to lose a game like this, you expect probably a few teething issues to happen along the way, unfortunately.
Of course. And we weren't the only side in the Championship to lose. I think you often find a lot of Championship sides. Southampton lost to Gillingham, you know, just probably pick of the sort of shock. So yeah, we weren't alone. And I sort of think about it. I think the missed chances are one thing, but also the other thing we prided ourselves on last season was clean sheets. And I think, you know, 1-0 was often a score that was enough. One goal was enough for us at the end of last season. So I think both Leicester and Wimbledon just caused a bit of frustration that we weren't able to, you know, to get anything out of those games. You know, because we conceded two goals, you know, both in quite late on. So obviously, that's something that, you know, Robin sort of said that we'd get better and learn from. And it just seemed that defeat sort of, you know, got the fan base sort of down a little bit. And then, you know, just 2 days later, the sort of saga, the summer saga, if you like, and the ongoing speculation finally can be put to bed regarding Gustavo Hamer. It came out thanks to Ross Spence's uncle's second cousin's dog that Victor Gyökeres was going to Sheffield United. And Ross, Ross Spence, your source was on the money. I guess, well, come to you first, Ross. When it came out, and obviously then it was officially announced at midnight, which also was a bit frustrating when you're tired. But when it obviously looked like it was happening and it was coming to an end, what was your what was your initial reaction, you know, to the news that Hamer was going to be off? Because for weeks it's been, is he going to sign a new contract? Is he going back to Holland for family reasons? There's been all sorts of speculation. Everyone seems to think they know when really probably none of us do, but he's off to the Premier League and to Sheffield United. What was your reaction?
Yeah, like you said, I'm one for putting stuff in our group, especially about rumours about Nan's cat's dog's uncle that knew about Hamer leaving. So yeah, when I found out off someone, obviously, and I had those WhatsApp messages, it kind of, when you first get told something, you think about it, but you still, until it's official, you don't ever think about the player going. I think it's one of those things. So when at midnight, or they announced a tweet on the Friday night and it said something about midnight, and my heart just kind of like went a little bit, because you just thought, please don't do it tonight, just before our first home game of the season. Then it come out and then you saw him in them red and white stripes, and it was just a devastating feeling, wasn't it? To just think it was good. It was finally done from the perspective of we can move on, and we can actually reinvest that money now as a club. And from, I mean, even Sky Sports said it yesterday, didn't they? We looked like we've recruited pretty shrewdly with our money and not just spent it for the sake of it type of thing, and not really had any idea or plan of action with it. So from that perspective, it was good to finally get it done. But obviously, I think the disappointing thing for me about it all is obviously we've thrown the kitchen sink at him. He said in his interview he knew that obviously the club, Doug, Mark Robbins, everyone, even the kit man would have wanted him to stay. You know, everyone wanted him to stay and tried to get him to do it. And we obviously went above and beyond to do it. And really the first sort of Premier League club that come knocking, he was gone really, wasn't he? Because obviously he's going to be on probably double what he was on here, plus bonuses, etc. He'd have probably got a percentage fee of that money that we've obviously just sold him on for as well. So obviously 50 million, if it's 10%, that's 1.5 million in his back pocket as well, potentially. And there's lots of other factors to it as well. And it's just, for me, I know, and we all know how good he is. I thought if he left, it would be like Vic, when he would go to a level that we wouldn't be at. Now, I don't look at Sheffield United as a club that, as a level that we cannot be at, if that makes sense. They are, yes, they're a league above us, but they're not really in terms of anything ahead of us in anything, to be honest. They're pretty much favourites to go down. They've lost a lot of their key players, Okundai, Sanderberg as well. And that's really the only reason, by the sounds of it, they went in for Hamer in the end, is because they lost him and they needed to replace him. So from that perspective, it was disappointing. And for him to basically say, oh, well, I found out about the interest Tuesday. He obviously played on Wednesday in the cup, which we lost as well. And then for obviously 2 days later, Tim to be gone, it was kind of a kick in the teeth. But that's football, isn't it? We've got loyal players, but when it comes, push comes to shove, they're always going to do what's best for their money and playing career wise. So
yeah, no, you're bang on. And I think the key thing is on after the news comes out, Matt, you know, and I think we're obviously all gutted, all devastated. Him and Vic, you know, single-handedly, you know, basically last, they dragged us up into the playoffs, didn't they, really, with their performances. And when the news comes out, there is that natural sort of, you know, deflated feeling. Even with Vic, actually, when it was actually announced, even though it was the most inevitable thing ever, and we all knew it was happening from the moment we didn't beat Luton, we knew that he was going to go. When it happens, there is still that, like, that sadness. I think with Hamer, there was a feeling that it felt like it was sort of 50-50 for a while, that he may well stay and commit a new deal. When did you sort of lose hope of that? You know, because it felt like last, maybe if it was at the Exeter friendly, there was some ominous quotes from Robbins. At what point did you start in your heart of hearts thinking his future's probably going to be elsewhere?
I'm going to probably credit Ross Spence's uncle's best mate's dog in this, because to be fair, he's not been wrong yet with a rumour. And when he said Sheffield United in that text to our group, in my mind, I thought, do you know what? That one, it does make sense to me, just on the fact of they'd obviously just sold Berger. They hadn't, you know, they needed to bring players in. It made sense in terms of a level for him to go to. And I just thought, do you know what? I could see him being enticed by the fact that this is a club that he can go to and start as a regular in the Premier League. No questions asked. You know, he goes there and they're parading him around before the game and everything else. And this is obviously I take on board what Ross says, but they are a level above us. You know, we have to be honest about that at the minute. They are a level above us because there's a massive difference between a Championship club and a Premiership club, whether they, come down next season, which they probably will. At this moment in time, if you're a professional footballer and somebody's talking to you about going to a Premier League team that you can play in and showcase yourself to the world, because that's what he's doing now. He's showcasing himself to the world as you do as a Premier League player, then that's a really big thing to turn down. So I think when I heard that it was Sheffield United who were interested, I'd kind of, I'd resign myself probably to thinking he'd go at the start of the transfer window. And then every day went by, I thought a little bit more confidently that he's going to stay and that away shirt was going to be revealed with him on it. And the 3rd of August, as we all got bought into that rubbish and all that kind of stuff. But every day that went along, I got a bit more confident. And I don't know when Ross actually dropped that rumour, which obviously proved again to be correct. At that time, I just had a bad feeling. I thought this to me makes sense. And, now he's got that opportunity, whether they go down or not, he's got that opportunity to show.
Put himself in the shop window, doesn't he?
Exactly. Yeah, that's my thinking. If he plays to the level of what he did for us in the second half of last season, they go down. He's not.
Another team will snap him. No, of course he won't. No, a West Ham.
He just needs to show that at Premier League level. Yeah. And then he goes on from there. And at the end of the day, he's 26, right?
Yeah.
He stays with us for another year. You start getting in the back end of your career and that opportunity. It's not this, even necessarily this move for him, in my mind.
Mm.
It's the next one. But he's got to do something to give him that window for the next move. So, yeah.
I completely agree. I guess the only sort of, were you surprised that a better team than Sheffield United weren't in for him? I guess that's the, like Ross, you were saying, they're above us at the moment. I wouldn't be surprised if we go up this year and they came down. I guess I was just a bit surprised myself that, because we know how good he is, and you've seen the likes of West Ham sign, Flynn Downs from Swansea and Lewis Potter you're going to Brentford from Hull. You see these other midfielders go for big money. Were you surprised that it was Sheffield United and that there wasn't a bigger Premier League side, more established coming in for him? Because that, I guess that was the only thing that surprised me, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of Premier League teams have missed a trick not signing, to be honest with you. For the value for money you're getting for Gus Hamer is unbelievable. If it is around 12 to 15 million pounds or whatever is being talked about, it's unbelievable value for money to get him. So yeah, absolutely. I think what it shows is, people have said Sheffield United and his head's been turned and this, that and the other. I just think there were no other bids that came in that were serious, that got to this level, that kind of met evaluation that we're going to let him go, because I think he would have done the same thing. I think essentially for him, if it was a Premier League team,
he wanted to go.
And I am surprised. And I think a lot of Premier League teams have missed the trick here, because if you could get him for 12 to 15 million pounds, you're on to a match winner. It's just a no brainer.
And again, obviously whenever news like this comes out, the Sky Blue Army Twitter, the forums just go into absolute meltdown. All the beds get wet again, and you got the usual suspects. You'd suddenly gone quite quiet, all come out the woodwork, and it's not my king, is trending on Twitter again. I had to get that in there. And but I'm not sure what more we could have done in this situation. We clearly, in years gone by, when we even 10 years ago, even longer than that, when we had the likes of Kieran Westwood and that, and we had star players, you sort of did question, had we made them a good enough offer? Whereas I have no doubt today that Hamer was probably offered probably one of the highest wages we've ever offered. Do you know what I mean? Ever. And he's obviously, I think if there'd been no Premier League offers, he'd have stayed. I really do believe that. But the other thing that Doug King has shown is that we're not going to accept any old offer. I think he would have kept him here and let him go for free if there had been a bid less than 10 million. So I think he stood firm. Sheffield United have lost Sander Berger. They were like, we need to get somebody in. I don't understand the sort of, I saw some people saying he's dropped a clanger here, Ross, and I mean, he's done the best thing for the club, hasn't he? You know, you're getting that sort of fee. You know, along with Jokeres, we've got two players there who were bought for $2.5 million combined. We're selling them for $30-35 million in one window, and we're reinvesting it. That's the key point. I mean, it was the right decision, Ross, don't you think, in the end?
Yeah, and ultimately, obviously, Hamer, I've tweeted it, he's a goat for us, isn't he? He really is the definition of a Coventry goat. But we got, I think our fans get really sentimental, and I've said it before, and they get very sucked in about things. And because we've not had a lot to cling on to, because we've had these gem players, it's very sentimental for a club like us, isn't it, that we've had them, and to lose them is almost like a child when you take their toy away. It's like, no, please don't. Oh, why are you doing that? You know, it's that sort of mentality. But none of these players are bigger than Coventry City ultimately, at the end of the day. Our club is our club, and it's not we've sold £35 million worth of assets and reinvested £2 million of it like we would have done under Sisu. Like you said, we have literally gone out. Like yesterday, we bought off the bench £10 million worth of players. Now, for those words to come out of a Coventry City fan's mouth is quite remarkable, because I did not think I would be saying those type of words being a Coventry fan. And to actually be able to witness us do that yesterday, it was like a proud feeling. I actually thought, oh my God, we actually are competing here. Like, we're actually the ones that are bringing players off the bench, something that I've always wanted us to do and we've watched other teams in awe of. We are doing it. And ultimately, that comes down to the funds of what they got us ultimately from getting to the playoffs and what we achieved with that achievement with both of them. And also then their fees from then selling them on both this year for what they've done and selling them to their new adventures at their new club. So there's no point being extremely bitter about it, because we've not been, it's not like we've been mugged off for both players and we've sat here like, exactly, oh, well, let them go. We've got the best we can for both of them. And I'm sure, like Jokeres is, Hamer will have some form of sell-on clause from Sheffield United in there, that when they sell him, that we will get money from him.
And I think with Hamer, as Matt touched on, I think it's more likely that he's probably going to get a move quicker than Jokeres, potentially in 12 months' time. And, you know, how many, you know, we spoke about it, obviously, on our Sky Blues Extra WhatsApp group, and, you know, you do get sentimental about players and people are irreplaceable, but how many irreplaceable players have we had? You know, Mark McNaughty was irreplaceable when we got promoted from League Two. How are we going to replace his goals? And Liam Walsh was irreplaceable. And who replaced him? Gustavo Hamer. Everyone was like, who's this guy? And it will come again. And me and Matt were talking before the podcast off air. We said, I was saying about Luton, who, you know, they beat us in the final. We could have beat them. But over the course of 46 games, they're the third best side. They didn't have either of those players. You know, we had two players who would get into any championship team. But there was four teams who finished above us. And if other teams hadn't bottled it, we might not have finished fifth. I'm not taking anything away from what we did. But there was, you know, we could have easily finished seventh another season if other teams had picked up other results, because it wasn't in our hand at, you know, with five games to go. So it's about building that squad and having that sort of depth. And you look at teams in the past, and Wardy always says it's about Brentford. You know, it took them several attempts. You look at Cardiff, you go back to their sort of golden era when they had Jay Bothroyd, Ross McCormack, Michael Chopra, three standout players. They didn't get promoted. They sold them. And then they had, you know, less X-factor players, but then they got promoted with the better side. Brentford, again, yeah, they sold Ollie Watkins and whoever else, and then they did it. And I think with Mark Robins at the helm, he's the key. People say Gustavo Hamer is the one who got us to the playoff final. He did on the pitch, but Mark Robins, for me, is the MVP of Coventry City. And I think while he's here, then we've got every chance. And, you know, is that how you see it, Matt, you know, in terms of the bigger picture for the club with this sale, that yes, it leaves a hole on the pitch, but it's one that we must be confident that we're going to fill and beyond, you know, in terms of elsewhere on the team sheet.
Yeah, like you say, we were talking before the pod started, you know, you think back to not very long ago and we're looking at potential assets that we have in the football club, and you know, probably even going back a year, we'd have said maybe three or four. Now we're talking about a potential not far off a match day squad worth of viable talents. And that's a combination of certain players that we're bringing through, like a Josh Eccles, and obviously we've brought him to become a viable asset, and we'll continue to do that with some others as well. But also with the fact that we can go out and spend some money and bring players through. And we're talking about the quality that we can bring off the bench. None of that happens if these sales don't happen. So it's unfortunate, but it is the cycle that we're in, you know, without having won that penalty kick the penalty shootout to go into the Premier League. We're still a Championship club. And when players perform to the level that Gyökeres and Hamer did, then there's going to be attention around them. And they're going to want to move on to what is, unfortunately, a level above us. So keeping Hamer, when Hamer doesn't want to be here, when he wants to play at Premier League level and have that kind of opportunity to showcase himself, wouldn't have been the right thing for us to do anyway. You know, we'd have had a season of him disoriented, kind of disillusioned with the club, not happy with being here, and probably wouldn't worked out best for us, because we've still got work to do to finish in those top six places. And you don't need a player who's probably not going to be up for the fight when he's that important to you. You know, we needed to get that money for him now. If obviously, you know, we were turning down bids for him and just saying, we'll see out your career and let him go on a free in 12 months time. So we've done the right thing. We've done the necessary thing. We've kind of been, you know, our hands been forced to an extent with that signing, but we turned it into a positive, and that's what we're doing now. We'll continue to do. You know, the big thing for me is how we started talking about this, and we're saying about the news going through and how devastating we're talking about this, like it's something that happened 3, 4, 5 months ago, right? This happened less than 48 hours ago. But for me, I'm already thinking forward, moving forward. I know the fact that we won on Saturday helped in between this news and where we are today, but I'm already now in a situation where I can say, well, look at what we can do on Saturday with this squad that we've now built off the back of these two players going. And that's before we invest another, whatever it is, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 million, who knows, it might be 15 with what we're seeing at the minute. So actually, you know, this only happened 48 hours ago, but in my mind, and hopefully a lot of Cough fans' minds, we're already saying that's in the past now. As much as we'll always love Hamer for what he did for this football club, and we'll probably see him around the area more often than a lot of other players who've left the club, we're already moving forward and we're doing it in the right way.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
You're listening to Sky Blues Extra.
So less than 24 hours after the Gustavo Hamer transfer was officially announced, well, actually 12 hours later, because it was announced at midnight, we had our first home game of the season. This one wasn't postponed due to a poor pitch. This time the pitch was looking lush, looking lovely. Almost 19,000 season ticket holders, a crowd of 24,000 eagerly anticipating, you know, what will hopefully be another impressive home campaign at the Coventry Building Society Arena. And welcoming a familiar foe in Middlesbrough, who we played, you know, three times in the last four games of the season. And Ross, you know, going to the game yesterday, before we even get onto the game itself, you can start noticing changes, really positive changes, you know, around in the concourse, you know, things looking neater, the new kiosks, you know, the fan village outside the main stand, the branding along the railing between the main stand and the, you know, the railway line, all those little things starting inside on the pillars, you know, sort of Coventry City branding everywhere. Those little things make a big difference, don't they, to making it feel more like our home than probably it's ever felt, even since we moved in 2005, 2006. So, yeah, I mean, how did you feel when you go up and you see all these new things? You see the pictures of the new dressing rooms that we've got finally back in the one we should have had, the new branding, the new dugouts, no Wasp seats anymore, Coventry City Sky Blue seats, and little touches like that just make it feel like we're actually a proper club again, and this is actually our home.
Yeah, definitely. Like even the writing on the like where Block 29 and 30 is around there, you know, you had CBS written on the seats instead of like Wasps and stuff, what it has been in the past. And like you said, I didn't actually notice the dugouts because I was in block five of that game, so I couldn't really see them. But obviously when I watched the game back on the telly, obviously we've now got the brand new sky blue seats in obviously the home and in the and the away end, which is just a great bit of touch to add to along the pitch, doesn't it? It makes it feel a lot more at home, like you said. And then obviously the pictures that the club tweeted of when the players are in the tunnel, it's all about Cobb now, and obviously they've got the picture of themselves on the side. The changing rooms now, it was basically like a BTEC Man City, wasn't it, really? Our changing room, if that makes sense. It was like we had the big crest in the middle of the pitch. Obviously, we then had the players with like the TV type screens with their names above each of their thing. That's for a club of our size and, you know, a club of what we have and a history that we have, that should be a standard procedure for us, to be honest with you. Do you know, and especially when we're at the level that we're at, when we were one kick away from the Premier League, we shouldn't be. It's crazy that we actually have to look at these things and think they're like an achievement or something special, because it should be a given to someone like us. But we obviously cherish it more because of the position that we've been in, which is why it's such a satisfying feeling for us, really, to have gone up and see it. And like you said, all those things, like even the crest being on the outside of the stadium now, you know, as you go around the CBS, you can just see all the Coventry badges on the outside. It does feel like it is now officially our home, and it does feel like the start of a completely new era.
It does. And I think those things that Robbins was quoted as saying, it feels like the club's had, you know, a breath of fresh air, new lease of life through it. And I think those things are important for the players and for Robbins. You know, he's been at the club for, he's the longest serving manager in the, you know, in the Championship, and like third or fourth in the whole of the, you know, the four divisions. And I think it's important for him to see that the club is progressing, you know, on and off the pitch. I think for the last few seasons, Matt Robbins, obviously we all know the work he's done on the pitch with, you know, his hands tied behind his back in a straitjacket, really. But the club has been very amateurish off the pitch. You know, the training ground, we know, is getting extensive work done for the two new pitches, and then obviously work's going to happen in the Wrighton building, the ground, you know, all these little things, you know, Ross just mentioned and spoke about. It feels like that's sort of important for Robbins, isn't it? You know, for him to see that we are pushing on, we want to get to the next level.
Yeah, it's a massively important point, to be fair. And it's something you could quite easily overlook. You know, we definitely do take Robbins for granted. And as we mentioned moments ago around the Hamer situation, you know, Robbins is the most important thing to us out of anything in this situation with what he does for this football club. And yeah, you can see it when he talks about the developments that are happening outside of obviously just the playing developments that we've made, which obviously is going to be massively important for him as well. But he just seemed to have a little spring in his step when he talks about it. I think I remember an interview and saying it's the most we spent on, you know, developments outside of the playing side in terms of the training ground and all of that since way before he was at the football club and prior to Premier League days and everything like that. So, you know, he's really excited, as you can imagine he would be, at all these little touches that we're making. But the little touches that are all adding up to, as you say, give us a much more professional feel to make this stadium feel like our home. You know, something that he can feel really proud about when you bring in new players into the facilities and showing them and trying to bring them on board. You know, we obviously spent a lot of time talking about that window, and it's quite funny, not only did they fix the window, but we've spent so much time actually improving the facilities across the board, and it does look good. You know, you've seen these pictures on that they kind of made a deal of announcing the changing rooms on Twitter before the game on Saturday afternoon, and I kind of saw that and I thought, wow, yeah, that does, you know, it gives you a little moment where you can feel like you're proud to maybe have other fans of other teams look at those touches as well. But as you say, going back to your initial point, yeah, for Robbins, you know, again, Doug King's, you know, identified again the most important asset to our football club, yeah. And these touches will be massively important to him.
100%, because you always feel with Robbins, like the fact that he believed that, you know, and his whole mantra, and I remember Michael Doyle, when he was on the Scarborough Extra podcast, talking about it, saying that when he went into League Two, Robbins was like, I want to get this club to the Premier League. And obviously, that's years before Sisu left. But you always feel with Robbins, if he feels like you just don't want him to ever feel like he's taken us as far as he can. And I feel like the new ownership and him seeing these changes, it feels like you said he's got a skip in his step. You know, ever since Doug King came in, you know, he feels like, yeah, I mean, when he said, oh, you know, we're not going to have loads to spend yet. Here he is spending the second most in the league. I mean, it's funny because on the forums, you've got some people making up stupid rumours, sort of saying, oh, Robbins is fuming with Doug King. I'm thinking, how can he possibly be fuming when he's been, yes, all right, we sold the two stars, but he's already spent like 18 million quid. He's, like you said, we're easily probably going to spend another 5 or 6, yeah, you know, based on Robbins' quotes after the game. So I think he looks buzzing. And as we sort of, me, Wardy and Dino spoke about in the preview pod, he has got something he's not had before, which is some pressure to deliver. But, you know, this is Mark Robbins, and I'm sure he will do that. And getting on to the game, and that's why it was also important after the two defeats that, you know, for us as fans, but also for Robbins and the team to pick up a good result. He made one change from the starting 11 that played against Leicester. Van Ajvak coming in and Eccles moving from right wing back to centre mid. So him and Sheaf were filling that midfield void. Matt, were you happy with the 11? Is that what you predicted would happen? Because obviously it felt like we were slightly light in midfield once the departure of Hamer was confirmed. Were you expecting any other changes, or were you pretty satisfied?
No, yeah, I think that was the obvious change, really. Obviously, Van Ajvak still in relatively early days in terms of his history with the football club, but at a certain point, you know, we've invested a lot of money. You want to see him starting in games, and obviously he needs that push to show what he can do. So glad to see him obviously now starting, and yeah, it feels like an obvious move bringing Eccles into the middle. You know, Eccles, again, we talk about that progression as a football team, and as much as we probably could have, well, we obviously certainly could have put Kelly in there. You know, if we are looking at what we can do in the future, obviously we're going to replace Heyman. We're going to spend money, but let's have a look at somebody. With every great respect to Liam Kelly, you know, it excites me more at the thought of putting Josh Eccles in there and seeing what he can become as a footballer versus knowing what Liam Kelly can do and where he is at footballer at kind of the other end of his career. And again, I mean that with no disrespect, because he's been a fantastic servant to us and obviously came in and was massively important to us towards the end of last season. But yeah, for me, I wanted to see Eccles come into that kind of gap that we obviously had with Hamer leaving, and seeing what we can do now with Eccles and Sheaf. Obviously we're going to get more competition in that area, but it's what I wanted to see. It's what I expected to see. And as we all know, it worked out well.
It worked out. And did you think, you know, did either of you think that Wright might start? Did you expect, you know, Sims, you know, Ross to sort of keep his place with Godden up front?
To be honest, I was actually quite surprised that he played Sims. Like, no disrespect to Sims, because there's one thing I'm going to say when I'm on here as well, and I've spoke to people about this yesterday, is that Sims, people, I think, obviously, when you've had a player like Jokeres, it's very easy to get sucked in that when we spend money that we're going to be very much trying to replicate the same type of player. Ellis Sims is nowhere near what Victor Jokeres will be in terms of dribbling with the ball, physicality. He is not that type of player. He's obviously, for me, got a lot to improve on in terms of, because he's a big boy, he needs to improve his hold-up play. But that will come with our coaching, which is one of the things that Mark Robbins has said. He's a good player, but he's got a lot to learn. And we feel like developing him, he will become a good player over time. So fans need to accept that part of his game at the minute might be weaker. But as the season goes on, it will get better. But I was surprised that Wright didn't play, considering that he played in the week. But I think he's obviously just trying to bed him in. But obviously, the impact he had when he come on again in another game, it wasn't just a one game wonder. He had an impact straight away. And then his finish that he scored for his goal shows everything of why we've paid nearly £8 million for this guy, and why he should be, why he should be starting for us week in, week out. Because that finish that he did, yes, people say, well, it fouled him and he shot. that's such an instinctive finish. And when I watched it back, there was actually a lot of players on the line and he hit it that well that they just had zero chance of getting it. And it didn't even look, like it really fazed him. He was in that position. It was just like one touch, finish, smash it in the back of the net, do my celebration. And that's the type of mentality and player that we've got to now have as a football club. Because I was one of those players with Van Ewijk as an example. I was like, oh, you know, well, he needs time. We've got to bed him in. And like one of my mates said, he said, Ross, we're not this let's get five loan players in that are 19 years old club anymore and bed them in for weeks. He said, we're paying a lot of money for these players. Yes, they're going to need time, but we've bought them for a reason and we need to be playing them ASAP to get them used to it. And we need to now, almost as fans, shift our mentality from that of, I'll give them time to bed them. Yeah, bed them in, but they need to be playing quickly and getting up to speed.
Get minutes, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're our players and we expect them to be able to perform. Yes, it's a different league, but these are £8, £4, £5 million players that we're spending money on. So they should be able to adapt a lot quicker than what 19-year-old Brooke Norton Cuffey would have done in January, as an example.
Very fair point. I think, you know, when, you know, and I think what Robin's, his observations are fair in terms of it is going to sort of take time. But like you said, then it, they're going to need to play, you know. And onto the game, we started well. Bright start. And, you know, what, 11 minutes in or so, we took the lead. Matty Godden, Matt, you know, scoring again, you know, same celebration, whipped it out, fingers in his ears. Nice move, sustained pressure. You know, it started De Silva crossing it. Van Ewijk picked it up on the far side, played it in, Eccles shot, took a deflection. But Matty Godden, again, one of those nice instinctive finishes, bottom of the corner, running up to my end, fingers in ears. But it was the perfect start, wasn't it? It's what we needed. I felt like the whole crowd needed, you know, after the news of Hamer and after the last couple of results, and it just got the CBS rocking.
Yeah, it gave us an opportunity to kind of, I don't know, just put a pin in what's happened, and here we are. This is what you've got moving forward, and there's a lot for us to be optimistic and excited about. And it, obviously, it reminded us about what Matty Godden is as a footballer, because he is a finisher. You know, he's not going to excite people, I guess, because he's been at the football club for a number of years. He's not, and we're spending money on players now, right? So we want everybody in the squad to be a £4-5 million player, but we still need to get the most out of people who can offer something to this squad. And Matty Godden gave us another reminder on Saturday of what he can bring to this squad. It's a Matty Godden type goal. You know, he's in the perfect position. He's first to react to the ball. It's really not a simple finish. And I know he doesn't get loads on it, but he gets what he needs to obviously put it out of reach for the goalkeeper. And you know, that ball coming at him, it's taking a deflection, it's not a great height, but it shows what Matty Godden is. A, he's in the perfect position to start with, but B, he does what he needs to do. He gets enough on it to put it into the bottom corner, and as you say, massively important for us to get that fast start in this game after what has been an ultimately a difficult week for us. So yeah, great to see him get the goal, and hopefully that will be it for the celebration. I know we got it a little bit later on, almost half embarrassed with their own goal, but hopefully it will die down.
Die down. Well, maybe he's just doing it until he comes up with, you know, something else for, you know,
just
bring that
he
can do.
About. You don't need to change it, do you?
I know. I enjoyed the aeroplane and the lawnmower, so yeah, something else. And we almost then made it 2-0. Ben Sheaf winning the ball back, Ross in midfield, could have played it through to Sims, instead played it to Godden cut inside, right-footed shot, parried, and then Van Ewijk running in. And from my angle, I thought, he hit it back across goal, I thought this is going to go bottom corner, and it, looking back on the highlights, went obviously just wide, and that was a big chance, wasn't it, for a debut goal.
Yeah, it was. Do you know, I was saying it to people, I think, again, Van Ewijk, I think you can see everything as to why we've bought him. I've noticed as well, he's got very, like, as weird as it sounds, he's got very, like, chunky legs, if that makes sense. He's very, like, in terms of how he moves on the ground, I can see why he's such a fast player, because he's very, like, He's very well rounded in his like sort of lower half of his body.
Like, he doesn't skip leg day like you, Ross. That's why.
Yeah, 100%. He definitely doesn't. He needs to take me through one of his leg days because he's got some big legs. He's a lot bigger in terms of when you see him out on the pitch than what you would have first thought, to be fair to him. But yeah, he's I think he just needs a bit more confidence when he goes forward, because I don't want him to get what I've called Dabo syndrome, where he just always feels like he has to pass it. He's obviously got a lot of quality and he does possess that. You can see he can defend. He has got a very good defensive attributes to him, which I'm impressed about. But I think going forwards, he's got pace. He always looks to get forward. He now just needs to get that confidence to use the ability he knows he's got. And he did actually have two shots, I believe, in the game, didn't he? He had that one. And then there was another one, I believe, from a corner that he put just wide. So he's not afraid to obviously have a shot, which we all probably knew before from his highlights from his other clubs. And one thing I did actually like that I didn't actually notice, and you guys will probably see this when you go back, it was on the Coventry Twitter header. When Godden scores, Van Ewyk actually runs over to the fans and he's literally like full on pumping his arms, going like, yes, come on. He's quite a passionate character, I think, by the looks of it, isn't he? And he likes to get the fans involved. So I think he's going to be a good asset as we go along. But like you said, it was a good chance. And from my angle in block five, where I was for that game, it actually did look like it was going in for a minute, but he just put it wide. But it'll come for him, I think. I think it's just going to be a confidence thing, like I said. And the more he gets used to linking up with Eccles and Sheath and any of the new midfielders we get, for example, and Palmer and all those things, the more they get to know each other, the more it's just going to start to click. And we'll see the full flourishment, I think, of him in games to come and months to come.
Exactly. And you know, the thing in that first half that sort of really stood out sort of to me, Matt, and I don't know if it to you as well, was the style of play. I mean, Robbins was actually berating our centre-backs for rushing it too much. You know, it was last year, it felt like, you know, injuries played their part, but, you know, the centre-backs would get it and they'd just look for the ball in the channel to Vic. And it felt like if teams defended that, then we were sort of, you know, found out and we had no other option, even with, you know, the best midfielder in the league, Gustavo Hamer. We bypassed him a lot of the time to play these balls into Vic in the channel. It felt like yesterday Robbins wanted us to be patient and really find those intricate passing, get the wing-backs high up like we did two seasons ago. You know, is that sort of the style that you think, you know, is going to get the best out of the players that we've got now, and, you know, having that extra depth? And do you think that ultimately is the way that Robbins sort of wants us to play? And obviously he just sort of had to adapt, didn't he, last year because of injuries and personnel?
Yeah, absolutely. You had something last season which became quite predictable, but Gyökeres was that good that it just became so effective and difficult for teams to stop, really. And you're not going to replicate Gyökeres, as we've said, as we know, like for like with a striker. So we need to really play a different way. And now we've lost Hamer as well. But there's no surprise in the kind of players that we're bringing in. If you look at, you know, Latibodier, and you look at Thomas starting it from the back. Thomas, we've seen already, very confident on the ball, and he's not afraid to come forward with the ball. Latibodier, we know, can play in a range of different positions. He can play right back, but he's also played centre midfield for Jamaica recently as well. So these are players who are confident on the ball, who can bring it out, who can play it out from the back. And that's not a coincidence. You know, it's been done because we need to change the way that we play from last season, because, as you rightly say, the main outlet for that, how we played last season, is no longer at the football club. So, yeah, it was really promising. You know, there's a lot of talk about how middles were played, and, you know, they've obviously got a lot to do in terms of their development still, but they've still got a lot of good players in that football team. And you saw it once they started to get a bit of a handle maybe on the way we were going to play, but we were really just playing through them with such ease in that first half. And you just thought, you know, this is just so good to see. It really did bode well for what's to come this season.
It did. And, you know, and you know, halftime came and 1-0 leading. And the second half, it was weird because obviously with a lot of new players, it's just going to take a little bit of time for them to completely understand each other's games. There's going to be the odd mishap or miscommunication. And that was the only real time that Middlesbrough got a clear chance. And they actually had a couple, you know, in the second half. There was the Morgan Rogers sort of danced through and managed to get past a few players and sort of had that shot, which I thought was in and somehow went wide. And then the big one was Latibodier and Sheaf initially, and then Latibodier and Fads all just bumping into each other like they were, you know, dodgems or something, you know, in the fair. And then the ball fell, and I thought I'd have put my house on that guy to score, and he blazed it over. I mean, that was it. Though there were a couple of big moments, weren't they? And you feel like that won't happen in a couple of weeks' time once Fads and Latibodier and the back three as a whole just become, learn, you know, get on the same wavelength completely. Because other than that, they look really accomplished, didn't they?
Yeah, I think one of the things that you would have said about last season, which made it probably easier to gel, is, you know, you take Fads and I know obviously we didn't get McNally until halfway through, but McNally and Doyle are both younger defenders. I think it was easy for Fads to just kind of say, I take the leads and you follow for what I'm doing. I think Latibodier, and from what we can see with Thomas, you know, Thomas is a young defender, but he obviously is a leader. He's obviously somebody who's got a lot of confidence in what he can do. And then Latibodier, again, you know, this is an international footballer. So it's, in a weird way, their experience or their confidence or whatever else maybe makes it a little bit more difficult to gel, because previously it's just been Fads. He's your main guy. He's your leader. He's your organizer. And then you two do what you do in terms of your quality. So there is an element of that. And obviously, as you say, that chance they had probably highlighted it, but they know this, you know, it doesn't take us to tell them, you know, what they need to work on. And obviously it's, you can see the quality that all three of them have got. It's not going to be a problem. It's just, we're still very early on in the season and you're probably going to get moments like this, but it's not something I worry about as an ongoing throughout their careers together.
No, of course not. And so, you know, you spoke about Bobby Thomas and Ross, I'll get your opinion on him and Latibodier very shortly. The big thing I notice is, and I remember this when we signed actually McNally on loan last year, and we had Doyle, Fads and McNally. Robbins said, used to say how quiet, you know what I mean? The only person really sort of shouting was Fads. And actually those, all the other centre-backs we had were just silent. You know, it seems like now Bobby Thomas, it seems like a natural leader. Latibodier, yeah, in his own interview said, by his own admission, you know, I like to think I'm a leader. If the rumours are true that we're going to get this Kitching from Barnsley, he's their captain. So he's a leader. And all of a sudden, you've got then a whole back line of people who want to communicate. I mean, Ross, what have you made of, you know, Latibodier and Bobby Thomas, you know, obviously, albeit, you know, just a couple of games into their Coventry City careers?
Latibodier was one. I used to sort of watch him at Swansea and he never stood out. And I think, obviously, a lot of their fans said, oh, we're not really too bothered about him going. But then I looked at the actual honest Swansea fans, and a lot of them said, well, to be honest, we played him out of position. And when he was at centre-back, he was a lot better for us. And looking at him, he doesn't look like he's only just signed for us. You'd have probably thought he'd been playing for us for about a year, the way he's playing at the minute. He loves to get on the ball. He doesn't get phased in awkward situations. Like, one thing McNally was bad at was if it felt awkward, the pressure, he'd make a bad pass or he'd do something silly. Whereas Latibodier has quite a bit of confidence that if he's under pressure, don't get it twisted, he'll still pass it back to Wilson if it comes to it. He still has full confidence and belief of, no, this is the way that we want to play and this is how I play and I'm not going to change that just because of a situation I find myself in. It's almost like embedded in him to be that way. And that's another sign of a leader without speaking. If you believe in a way of playing and you go against that, then that has an impact on the team. If your teammates can see that you always do things in a certain way, it's an example, isn't it, for the rest of the team to sort of follow as well. And Bobby Thomas, as I said to you yesterday, Ross, he's dynamite, isn't he? He really is a gem. I didn't know too much about him. I remember I did watch the League One playoff final and he did play really well because they defended so well in that final against Sheffield Wednesday, especially when they had 10 men. But I'll be honest, I didn't know evidently a lot about him. But then seeing him in pre-season and then away at Leicester last week and then like this week again, he's just, like you said, he's a real, real leader, isn't he, for someone so young? And he just doesn't. The ones that impressed me more than anything were the corners. Like, they whipped in two corners in that first half down sort of my end, and they were really fisting corners. And both time it was just boom away, head, no phase on it at all. It was just head it, get it out, and then he'd squeeze the rest of the team out. And that's a sign of a real leader. And like you said, last year we'd have really probably only looked at maybe Fads for doing that type of sort of thing. He'd be the one to put his head on it and get everyone out. But having those players now who will both do those things as well as McFadden is like you said, he's a real positive and it's going to benefit us massively.
No, it certainly is. Certainly is. And me and Matt were speaking, you know, before the pod, and it's great to look around the squad and all these people who impressed us, all of them who played yesterday are our players for the next 3 or 4 years. De Silva, Bobby Thomas, you go through the side and you know, Ellis Sims and obviously Hadji Wright, and I'll come on to his goal now, Matt, made it 2-0. Casey Palmer now on seemingly on corner duties, you know, in the absence of Hamer, whipped in, Godden, good movement, flicked it on from the near post, hit a Middlesbrough player on the line, came out, and so Ross has touched on it already, but a really, you know, impressive sort of finish, and it almost felt, I don't know, I don't know how you felt, I just felt pretty confident. I thought goal, you know. And how important do you think that is for him, you know, our club record signing? You know, Craig Bellamy was our club record signing for, you know, that record for 20 odd years. It's finally been broken, which I don't think any of us thought was ever going to happen, regardless of selling Gyökeres and Hamer. I don't think any of us thought, I think we all thought, oh, if we buy 5 £1 million players, that would be good, you know, let alone spend 7.7 on one player. But how important is that for him, you know, to get off the mark with a goal and feel the atmosphere and for him to now kick on?
Yeah, he's a striker. You know, you look at him, he looks unbelievably chilled as a human being. So you kind of think, if there's anybody who probably doesn't feel a lot of pressure or a lot of the noise or anything like that, he might be one of them, but he's a striker, right? You know, he goes 3, 4, 5 games without a goal, that could very quickly change. So to get that out of the way, to get that done, to do it in front of the Sky Blues fans at home in the first home fixture of the season, it's massively important for any striker, especially when you've got that kind of price tag against your name. You know, we are a fan base that spent years, as you say, without really investing any money, and nobody expected us to spend this kind of money. So when you are brought in at that level, the expectation comes with it. And as chilled out as he looks, you know, you take 4, 5, 6 weeks of Cov fans who are looking at you as their new prized, you know, signing for all this money, it's easy for anybody to let that get to them. So massively important. But yeah, like touching on the other points as well, Palmer's deliveries have looked really threatening. Obviously, we've got the 2 goals from them now. You know, obviously, Godden had an influence on the goal. But more than anything, obviously, you can look at it and say, well, he's 5 yards out and he's put it home. But actually, he's pulled back a really good point. So he's obviously found some level of space for him in case the ball goes to that area, rather than just stand closer to the goal, which I thought was really good to see. And then, as Ross did touch on, you know, it's a better finish than it looks from that close, because there are 3 players already on the line. He has to pick a spot, and he does it, and he does it with pace. So yeah, it was a really good goal. And as we say, really important for him to get off the mark so quickly. And he looks fantastic. He looks like, you know, we've really got somebody here.
Yeah, exactly. And like you say, when there's big shoes to fill, it's important to get off the mark. And then we made it 3. Matty Godden, again, a nice move. Counter-attack Ben Sheaf, who was superb, winning the ball. Hadji making a run, and then it fell to Godden. And a shot, took a deflection, went in, and then did his celebration, like you said earlier, Matt, with a wry smile on. Because, I mean, from my angle, I don't know whether he'd like totally just deceive the goalkeeper. And then you watch it back and you go, how he's got the audacity to celebrate that is beyond me. But it went in, and then we could have made it 4. Hadji had another chance, didn't he? A superb block, denying him a second, which would have been superb. But all in all, a fantastic win, clean sheet. And yeah, I'll get a couple of man of the matches. I'll start with you, Matt. You know, who stood out for you from the game?
I think one of the things you said to me, quickly touch on, you know, everybody looked good, but everybody looked like they potentially could improve, which is actually one of the most positive things from the day, because you look at everybody there and you say there's more to come from Wright. I think, as Ross touched on earlier, Van Uyck, his positioning was good from a defensive point of view. He was always there from an attacking point of view. Just when he gets that license or that confidence to go forward a bit more, but he was really good. Really give a shout out to Eccles for the job that he did coming in. And obviously a lot of pressure taken over from a position that obviously Hamer's done so well for, is even just going into that centre midfield if he's not expected to do the same job. There's obviously going to be comparisons, and he did it really well. I think Dino made the point of, you know, how vocal he was and really put himself about there, which is a really promising thing to see. But for a man of the match, I'll go Ben Sheaf. He just did Ben Sheaf things as well as, you know, we'll ever really see them. His tackling, his retention of the ball, using it the right way. That little opportunity we had at the end with that interplay between him and Haji Wright to kind of set that up was fantastic, and it shows what he can offer going forward as well. So yeah, for me, this is one of the best performances in a Cov shirt, and obviously massively important because we're going to need people to step up in that area of the pitch now. So I would give him the nod.
Yeah, no, I personally 100% agree, and I think everything you said, that's the exciting thing, that this team feels like they've all got several gears to go up. And Ross, who would you give your man of the match to?
I'm actually going to give him on to someone else. I'm going to give him on to Josh Eccles. I thought Josh Eccles was actually outstanding yesterday. I actually think he was involved in a lot of good things that we did, and his actual, the tempo that we played at. And one thing that you've got to remember is he's basically gone into Hamer's position. So although everyone knows he's not that player, he's got to have a lot of bollocks basically to go in there and try and play as in a similar way to how Hamer would, which requires getting on the ball, if we're being totally honest. And yesterday he could have shied away. He could have just tried to do his job, sit next to Sheaf and, you know, do what he needed to do. But he, every time he was just showing for the ball, getting on the half turn, doing one twos, trying to link up play, trying to get it forward to the strikers. We all know he can make a tackle, and he's not afraid to make a tackle. There was a lot of things really yesterday that Sheaf really impressed me with. Eccles impressed me with yesterday. And for me, I'm actually going to give him the man of the match. And I just think, like we all said a minute ago, I think another thing speaking on Haji Wright's goal that impressed me is we've never been good at corners, like ever. And yesterday it struck me that we've scored 2-2 from corners now, because we obviously scored away at Leicester with when Hamer crossed it to McFadden. And then yesterday Palmer crossed it and the Haji Wright goal come. And I've noticed that our players are all making like different runs and stuff now when we're in the box. So instead of it being very like zonal, I noticed that Godden made a run to the near post. Bobby Thomas was like in the goal, and then other players were. So it feels like we've done a bit of work on set pieces. And I think this could be something we actually see a lot more of this year because of the caliber of players that we've recruited. We've not really, bar Sakamoto and De Silva, the rest of our players are pretty big guys that we've brought in, aren't they? So I think that could be something that we can watch out for as the season goes on. His set pieces is maybe something. Robins, Luton were very good at it, and look where it got them. So maybe it's something Robins realises that we need to probably add into our game, and with it being a tougher division this year and trying to have different weapons, and one of them being good from corners and free kicks and set pieces. So that's going to be an interesting one to watch, is we've never really been a threat from those sort of things for pretty much my whole life of being a Cov fan. I've never seen a team be a threat from corners. So to score 2-2 from corners is quite a good sign of things to come.
You're listening to Sky Blues Extra.
So next up for the Sky Blues is a trip to Swansea City. And Matt, you know, Swansea, they've had quite a lot of changes over the summer. Lost their manager, Russell Martin, brought in Michael Duff. Barnsley fans, I'm sure, are delighted with the amount of players and that they're losing. And obviously, if, you know, we may well be in for another one or possibly even two of their players. What have you made of Swansea? They're, to me, a bit of an unknown entity, obviously, with the change of manager. But what can we expect? And, yeah, what are your thoughts going into that game next week?
Yeah, I think they're a team that are going to need some time, to be honest with you. You know, they've lost their manager. It's probably going to be a toss-up in the next few weeks who Barnsley fans hate more than out of us or Swansea, considering, you know, what we're lining up to do in the transfer market, because obviously he's done a really good job for Barnsley last season and comes with a decent reputation. But Swansea fans are obviously they were obviously quite hopeful in what they had in Russell Martin. So he's got big shoes to fill, and he's got very much his own philosophy and what he wants to do. So they've lost a lot of players in the summer. I think they lost 15, brought in a good number themselves, 9, which included Jerry Yates as probably the most, you know, high profile or biggest money transfer that they made. Obviously, they've just recently signed Charlie Patino on loan from Arsenal as well. So there's a lot of change there. And I just think Swansea fans are obviously going to have to be patient in terms of what they can expect in the early part of the season, because they've got a lot to bed in from a player perspective and a new philosophy. So I don't think it's the worst time to play them, to be honest with you. You know, it's not a ground that we've had great experiences of going to in the past, but it's probably not the worst time to play them whilst they still get to get used to life with this essentially new squad and obviously a new manager as well.
And I agree with that. I think it's because Russell Martin had a very definitive, distinct way of playing, which is why also I think it's going to take Southampton, you know, on a different note, time to get up to, you know, how he wants them to play. But they also, I'm not sure if it had been confirmed, but they were also linked with that Humphreys, you know, from Chelsea. Has that, do you know if that, has that happened, that deal? Or is that, you know, because we were linked with him as well, weren't we? I mean, I don't know how serious and, you know, concrete those rumours were, you know, obviously their whole...
It's gone quiet again over, after the last couple of days. It seemed pretty much nailed on, because I know, obviously, the conversation seemed to have been that Chelsea were going to retain him, but were obviously very much looking to move him out on loan. And I was quite hopeful by that news, thought it was something that we would be involved in. And then when you see Swansea have come in, you know, it looked like that must have meant it was fairly developed. So it seems to have gone quiet the last couple of days, and they've moved to bring Patino, which I know is in a different position, but it looks like their focus maybe has shifted. So be interested to see what happens with that one, because he's, you know, he's an exciting prospect, and, you know, they can certainly do with the help, to be honest with you. So we'll have to see what happens there. But yeah, they're obviously still working on the final touches for their squad. They certainly don't feel like they're a finished prospect, and for us, again, probably isn't the worst time to play them.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what business Swansea do between now and when they obviously we play them on the weekend. Joel Latabodier, with his first time going back, so hopefully he can have an impressive performance for us. Ross, obviously, this next week for us as well could well bring some more transfer business in terms of incomings. You know, Robins, obviously, with the confirmation that Hamer's gone, it's gone from being 2 more to 3 or 4 more. What would you like to see us do, you know, in the remainder of the transfer window? But it sounds like Robins really wants to get them in as soon as possible. So sort of what positions... What is your, you know, your grandma's umbrella's second cousin's daughter, Kat, said about who we might be after?
Yeah, I'd like to see the 4 maximised, if I'm honest. I think 3 of them being permanent as well. I think I'd like to see, obviously, Liam Kitchen. I've been a fan of him for a while, and obviously that died down, and I thought, well, maybe it won't happen. But I also like the fact that we'd have a core of Collins, Thomas and Kitchen, who were all at Barnsley with each other last year. And I also think this will then have an impact on Kitchen, because I know that Thomas and him were quite good mates, and Thomas looks quite at home so far. So I think obviously if he knows there's going to be a bid put in, I'm sure there'll be some form of persuasion from Thomas's side to get him across the line. And again, he's another leader, and he is a very, very good player. And if you look at what Barnsley say, he's the real deal, and he's still quite young, I think, as well. So I'd like to see him get wrapped up. I know we've been linked with his styles, haven't we, as well? I think he was at Millwall last year or something like that, or he's at Barnsley now anyway, and he's a decent player. And I think Robins have actually admired him quite
a lot. Has. He's a box-to-box. He can play a few positions. I remember when Barnsley were last in the Championship, you know, Robins really raved about him, because he's got energy. You know, he could play at the top of the box. You know, that's what Robins wants, doesn't he? He wants that work rate off the ball.
Yeah, he likes that, doesn't he? And it's that's an interesting one. And then One from my nan's cats, dogs, uncles, umbrellas. one is that I've seen floating around is a guy called Evander. He's one for fans to look at. He's quite an interesting one, actually. He's Brazilian, so Brazil for Brazil-like. I don't know if there's any truth to it at all. I've just seen it floating around, but I did a bit of research earlier on. He's probably going to cost us quite a bit of money. Currently plays in the MLS for Porto Lando, I think it is what they're called, or something like that, or Portland, I think.
Portland Timbers, yeah.
Portland Timbers, he plays for them at the moment. Yeah, I think he's about 25, so not similar age to Hamer. His net worth is currently, I think it was either 8 or 9 million euros. So obviously, he could be one, really, that we might chuck quite a bit of money at, potentially. So there will be plans. And like we've said, plan A was always keep Hamer and probably get one or two more in, wasn't it? But I think plan B is obviously now unfolded. Hamer gone, sheepfolded, and now it's right. Here's the four. I think Robin said to Neil, Doug's not going to be happy with me, but Doug will now know the score that he's now got rid of Hamer. He's not going to go, oh, well, I can't give you X, Y, and Z. He's not like that. He's not stupid. He knows we've lost an asset and how big it is. He even said it on Sky yesterday. We wanted to keep Gus. He said, Gus knows. He said, and it wasn't something we... He said, we always knew it was a possibility, but the longer it went on, the more we were basically hopeful as a club we were going to keep him. But he now knows he'll need to reinvest that money. So I think we can expect some quick movement, and we've shown we're quite shrewd with our business. So I expect us to act like sharks over the next week to try and get some business wrapped up. And I'm hoping to see, even if it's maybe Kitchen and Styles to start with, just those two to come in will be a big, big bolster. And then the others can commence afterwards. Yeah, I'd like those, maybe the two centre mids, a centre back. And I've still said a lone striker would be nice as well. So we can get Tavares back out on loan as well once he's back. So.
Yeah, well, Robbins had alluded, didn't he? He wanted another forward player, someone can play across the front and potentially give us an actual option to have a plan B and potentially revert back to the formation that he started the League One winner season, maybe, which was the 4-3-3. He's also liked the 4-2-3-1 in the past. So we'll have to wait and see, but it is certainly exciting times. I will get quickly, before we finish, some predictions from you both. I'll start with you, Ross. What's your prediction for the Swansea game?
Speaking of Swansea, I've got PTSD from that ground. I think it was like Matt said earlier on, we never do well there. I mean, we should have won there last year, but I'm glad we're getting this one out of the way early. To be honest with you, I want to be positive, but I'm going to put it into perspective. I think it could be a draw. I'm going to go with a 1-1, I think, and I'll be happy with the point there. If we take a point from there and move on, I'll be happy with that going into Sunderland at home the week after. So yeah, 1-1 for me.
And Matt, what are you going for?
Yeah, I'm going to double up on that. 1-1 for me. You know, I think we're in a better position than them. I think there's every possibility that we can go there and win, but it's a decent old way to go. It's not a ground that's done too well for us. I don't think any of us would be too gutted to see us leave with a point. So yeah, I think we will. I'm going to go for 1-1 as well.
Lovely. 1-1 all it is. So we'll have to wait and see. Thank you, chaps, for joining me. That's all we've got time for on this episode of the Sky Blues Extra podcast. Listeners, as always, thank you for your support. Make sure you check out Dylan's Brewery and the Sky Blue Tavern, who we're proudly sponsored by here on the podcast. And make sure you listen and share with all your friends and subscribe on YouTube as well. And if you haven't already, make sure you check out our season preview podcast, which is able to listen to and watch if you want to see Dino's beautiful face on your laptop screen. That's all we've got time for. Thank you, chaps, and play up Sky Blues, and make sure you follow us at SBE Podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Sky Blues Extra podcast.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.